Broadcasting live from beautiful, historic Marion, Ohio, it's Now with Scott Spears on WWGH 107.1 FM. Call Scott live on the air anytime at 740-383-9944. No topic is too big or too small. I'm your announcer, the man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. And now, here's your host, Scott Spears.
Thank you, man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. Scott Spears coming at you here at Thursday, October the 21st, 2021, 10-21-21. 18 minutes past the hour here, and we've got a great show today. Great day of programming here on WWGH Radio. When I'm done this morning, we've got Glenn Coble on today from 10-10 a.m. until 12 noon. I believe he's got Fred Malone from the Marion County Historical Society on. And then we've got Swap Shop today from 12-10 until 1 p.m. where you can sell your... I don't want to say unwanted, but used items from 12:10 to 1 p.m. today. And then Adam the Computer Guy today from 2:10 until 3 p.m. and a whole lot of programming in between. Now, next hour on this program at 9:45 this morning, you may have heard of the big concert coming up at the Palace. Tomorrow night, Friday night, the big country music concert over there. And next hour, we will have via telephone Sammy Kershaw on, who's one of the performers at tomorrow night's event. So look for that at 9:45 a.m. this morning. But during the first hour here, the first portion of the program this morning, we're going to revert back to a story that we have been covering really up until last Friday, and things continue to happen in regard to this. But a lot of people have questions about the Books of Marion and where we are and where we've been and how did we get here. Of course, as many of you know, it's no secret now that former city auditor Robert Landon resigned last week. There was a little bit of a kerfluffle about that, but a lot of things have happened over the last 9 months. So, to try to figure all this out and figure out where we are today, I'm so glad we have in studio the current interim auditor of the city of Marion, Martin Watts. Martin, thanks for coming in today.
Well, thank you for having me, sir.
Martin, let's start from the beginning here. How did you come and when did you come to the auditor's office?
After the election in 2019, I was asked to become a member of the auditor staff, so I joined the auditor's office in January of 2020 when they took office.
What was your position there?
My position was a deputy auditor tax commissioner. There was two deputy auditors, myself and another person. They handled the finance area, and I was in the income tax area.
So you have been with that office pretty much since the inception?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Now, when it comes to that office, does it matter what political party you are? A lot of people have had questions about this.
It's basically up to the elected official. Not everyone holds true to the, it's better to have, a Republican than a Democrat, or better to have a Democrat than a Republican. A lot of people, like to just get the best person available.
Are you a Republican or a Democrat?
Yes, I am a Republican. Have been for 30 years.
There were a lot of stories in the beginning that there was a big change of the guard from one auditor to the next. Did you find that to be true at that time?
Yes. What had happened was, within the auditor's office also, there are many people there that are just civil servants. They just, they're protected. They have their jobs to do. They're not in a management or a decision-making position, but they're the people that really get the nuts and bolts of the office completed. So they stay on, but yes, there was a purge of the office.
Is that typically a normal thing?
I'm not exactly sure. I was at the county for 30 years, and I can tell you that the county auditor's office, under Joan Kasotis, Michelle Pearson, Joe Campbell, and Lois Weber, I don't know because I wasn't around when Lois came on, but as each one of them came on, they might have brought one person with them, but they kept the whole staff. There wasn't a purge. And I think that's why you see some stability there.
In the beginning, was the office different than it was at the end last week? If you go back to January of 2020, would you say the office had a different feel than it did on the last day under Robert Landon?
Oh, yeah, I would think that would be a true statement.
So what was the office like in the beginning?
Well, in the beginning, since we did not have people, there was a big learning curve. So it took a couple months to really get into the system and learn. The auditor's office isn't an easy position. There's a lot of things that have to be handled, and there's a lot of detail. You're responsible for a lot of money. You have bills to pay. You have payroll to do. Plus, you know, there's all kinds of contracts and other items that other departments depend on you for financial support.
We heard a lot during this whole episode about something called the Yarger Report, that the city had set guidelines for positions in certain offices. Did you find that that was being followed in the auditor's office?
Well, I'm not really sure. I think that there was one instance that might not have been followed. But yes, the Yarger Report was established by City Council to make sure that qualified people were in position and that pay rates were set so that across the city, so that, you know, you wouldn't have a secretary in one part making a certain amount of money and a secretary in another part division of the city making a different amount. So it was set up to be an equalizing force, or a fair labor practice, in my opinion.
At what point, in your opinion, perception, did things start to unravel a little bit? And just to catch people up on things that have been said, mispayments to the IRS, or mispayments to the state that should have gone to the IRS, which gave us some penalties. An employee in the auditor's office buying gift cards on the city credit card. When did you start to notice that something was going on?
Well, I guess it's always easy to look back and say this was the exact point. I think, in my opinion, things just built from the beginning.
So right from the very beginning?
Yes, more or less.
Do you have any, now that you look back, hindsight's always 20/20. When you look back now, do you have a reason for why that was? Why from the very beginning there were issues?
If I look back, and like I said, this is just my opinion. I'm sure everyone would have a different opinion. There just seemed to be a problem with cooperation between our office and the whole city.
Well, this has been a thing, certainly with the mayor's office. Anybody who's heard the mayor on this program could clearly see or hear that there was tension between the mayor and the former auditor. Do you know why that was working in the office? Do you know where that came from?
Well, here again, it's just, an opinion on my part. I'm not exactly sure that the former auditor wanted to really work with the mayor.
Did you ever see the mayor do anything that would give you the indication that he didn't want to work with the auditor?
No. Like I said, I didn't deal with the day-to-day between the two of them. But no, I did not observe that.
Want to talk about some of the issues with the city of Marion that apparently still are upon us. Reconciling of the city's books for 2020. What does that mean for somebody who's not in this field?
Well, basically what that means is reconciling means that the city has a set of books. And in this case, it's run by a program called New World. And then the city has their money in a bank, which is at the time Fahey Bank. But there's other banks too. The Tom Panett, our current treasurer, is in charge of investments. And so we have a list of banks that hold capital for the city. And so at the end of the month, what an office needs to do is they need to look at the amount of money that came in and the amount of money that went out. And then you compare your books to the bank. It would be no different than, you know, you take your checkbook out and you take the bank statement and you go down and you look and see how many checks you wrote and see which ones have cleared the bank. It's a little more complex than that on larger scale, but that's basically simply what it is. You just want to make sure that when you're done, like, you know, there are some checks that you have written that haven't made it to the bank, and you could have put a deposit in recently that hasn't shown up in the bank. Our books are a little more complex than that, but that's basically the idea. So you just go along, you check off what the bank has, what you have, then you know, the bank will have put interest on and fees, so you know, you have to add the interest to your side, take the fees off, and then when you come down, the bank and the book should equal the same amount. And if it doesn't, then there's a problem.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong in any of this, because this is what we understand as a public, that the books of Marion typically would have, for 2020, would have been reconciled in May of 2021. That did not happen for some reason, and there was an extension requested. And then it did not happen again, and there was a second extension requested and granted by the state. And then it still did not happen. And then there was a third extension requested that was not granted. And then now here we are.
Yes, well, bank reconciliation needs to occur each month. And then at the end of the year, you have your end of the year amount to carry over into the next year. The system under the auditors, my office now, for the current time, never came to that figure. The system that was used identified the money coming in and the money going out. So it would be as if you took your bank book and your checkbook and you marked off all the stuff that matched. You just never brought them back together. So, I mean, half the job was completed. Now, on government, we do reports, and it's audited each year. Since the books were never reconciled or matched up so that the state auditors can compare the books that we maintain in New World and the bank records, they were unable to do the audit, which I think has been clearly expressed time and time again. At the first part of the year, though, the auditors, the state auditors, have a contract with the city of Marion that they will do the audit each year, and I think it's like a three-year contract, and we're at the end of the third year. With COVID and I think they had one of their auditors had a birth of a child. They were shorthanded, and they said that they would not be able to get to the books right of way, and that the city was free to look at other directions, that they wouldn't hold us to the contract. At that point, the former auditor had asked the city council if they wanted to go on and use another company. At the time, city council decided they didn't want to do that. They wanted to stick with the state auditors instead. So there was an extension filed. So basically, the first extension could be blamed on COVID, but the subsequent extensions could not. They were because we had never reconciled the books the way the state wants.
And I guess the obvious question here is, why was that? Why were the books not reconciled to the state's satisfying?
I don't really have a good answer for that. We had meetings with Mr. Hinkle, and he is the head of audits with the state auditor. And we had discussed this, and he expressed that this needed to occur. At the time, we had a person that was working on that, had moved on to bigger and better things, and they're just, I guess you could say the ball was dropped.
Was the auditor, the former auditor, Landon, aware of that? Was he aware that Mr. Hinkle was saying this is not correct and the other person had moved on to better things and that there's going to be an issue here?
I believe he was aware, but I don't, you know, I mean, I can't tell you what another person believes or not. So, you know, I mean, he may have a different opinion, and he could, and I'm sure he does, but... I believe, but here again, you know, being an accountant, I have been for a long time. When we were in this discussion with Mr. Hinkle, I think that when certain things are said, you know, between accountants, that an accountant can pick up on what it means better than somebody that wasn't. I mean, like for you, for instance,
Yeah. We
could have a discussion here with Mr. Hinkle and we get done with the interview and you go, what did he say? And it's like, well, that's easy. He, you know, said this and this, but it may not come through to you that way because of, you just don't, it's just not your forte.
So Auditor Landon was in on those conversations, at the time.
Yes.
Okay. That's just what we want to make sure of. Now, the big question is, as where we sit here on October, where are we at here? October 21st, are the books reconciled?
No, they're not. But there was a meeting with the state auditors. At the time, there was confusion in the office. I was not privy to that meeting, but they had a meeting with the former auditor, and they had a meeting with the mayor. And it is my understanding and belief that there is a direction forward to get this situation corrected. And I believe that the city is on the road to accomplishing that task with the help of the state auditors. So I don't think it's as dire as it was maybe several weeks ago, where everyone's thinking, you know, well, how is this ever going to get fixed? How are we going to clean this up? But I think that the Mr. Faber's office, the state auditor, and more likely the local auditors have come through with a plan to get this corrected, and we can move forward.
One of the things that has made this a complicated situation, and the mayor came on and expressed this after he met with the state auditors, I want to say either late August or early September, was that there is a figure somewhere in the neighborhood of $2.5 million of federal money that the city of Marion receives that help run Marion Transit, help run the senior center, helps hire certain police and firefighters. And also, just to put together a city budget, you need reconciled books for the upcoming year. This $2.5 million, now it's been my understanding, and maybe you can clear this up for us after a long discussion of this over the last 2 months with many people, that the books have to be reconciled for 2020 to apply for this federal money. And since the books have not been reconciled, we have not been able to apply for that money, and it could be lost. What is the state of that $2.5 million?
Well, I think at the time that you talked to the mayor that this was a legitimate concern, and it was a worry that all the people at City Hall had. I think that the concern came to the point that if something's not done to reconcile the books and get things moving forward, then the state auditors could deem the city of Marion unauditable. And if you're unauditable, then there can't be a CAFR report done, and there can't be an audit done. And without those, no, you cannot apply for federal funds. Now, on the flip side, with the current information, and if we move forward, I mean, there is a possibility that this could still occur. I don't think it's as dangerous as it was when you talked to the mayor. But I think with the city working with the state auditors and coming to a conclusion that this is not as big a concern as before, because as we're working with the state auditors and we come and get the things done, and then we can provide that information to them, then I do not believe that the feds will withhold the money. Although there's still a slight possibility. It's not something that you can just say, oh, don't worry about that. It's still a concern, but I don't think it is as big a concern as it was when you talked to the mayor about it previously.
Is there any timeline at this point on when you think the books will be reconciled for 2020? Do you think?
I don't have a timeline. And of course, the auditors haven't given us an indication. I think it's more or less we have to get into it and see, take the necessary steps to make certain adjustments. And I say adjustments there, I don't want to get too much into the accounting, but basically what happens is when you write a check, it goes into accounts payable, and then when you cut the check, then it comes out of accounts payable, but sometimes there's liabilities left over, so adjustments have to be made. But once we get in and make those adjustments, I think that we'll have a much clearer picture of how soon this will occur.
Something that kind of confused everybody, I know at City Hall and us in the media, is we all got a press release on, and I want to make sure I have it here just to read it so I don't misquote anybody. On October 6th, a press release was sent out from then-City Auditor Robert Landon, and it involves these two issues, here's exactly what it says. It says, contrary to the information and statements that have been made concerning the responsibilities of my office, I wanted to take the opportunity to, in fact, let you know what exactly the truth is, not the false statements some have made. My office has met our deadline that is required for us to maintain our bonds. The report we submitted is referred to as the annual information filing. This was completed in a timely manner. Further, my office has submitted all information to the state auditors in reference to the reconciliation of our finances. Now, that's October the 6th. There then was an interview given by Mr. Landon to the Marion Star in which he said the federal money was okay and that the state is backlogged because of COVID and that's why we have heard nothing back about the books. Now, the follow-up to all this is that when Mr. Landon announced his resignation, the Associated Press contacted the state auditors and says, have you got anything from the city of Marion? And they said no, as of last Wednesday. What were you surprised when this press release came out?
Well, no, not really. There's a couple different things, and it's a complicated issue, but what the former auditor stated was, on the first part, is that with our bonds, the city has bonds out. We refinanced the bonds last year. And there's an obligation to the bondholders that you perform a report. Now, this report was completed and it was done on time. So that fulfilled our requirement to the bondholders as we're required to by, I'm not sure, FCC or whoever it is. I don't think that's the exact one. I'm sorry.
A government office.
Yes, a government office. Yeah. So that fulfilled that requirement. So he's correct in saying that. And then we also have to provide the most current audit that we have to the rating agencies to maintain our bonding rate. We have not done that yet because it hasn't been completed. Although the rules underwriting the bonds are say that you have to give it to them on an annual basis, it doesn't say when you have to give it to them. So technically, and I don't know how hard they'll enforce this, technically we could give it to them anytime that it's completed. You have 10 days after it's completed. So since it's not completed, we're not really in violation of that either. Although I'm not sure that the bonding agency feels comfortable about that. Now, as far as the federal fund goes, and what the concern of was the mayor, was not so much either one of these situations, although if we didn't fulfill our requirement to the bonding, to the bond holders, then we could have lost ranking with the bond, you know, our bond rating could have gone down. That didn't occur, but I think what the mayor was worried about was becoming unauditable and losing federal funding, because federal funding is different than bonds. Bonds, we just sell debt. Federal funding is, you know, something you apply to the federal government. So those are two different issues. There was a long statement in there, and I'm not sure.
Well, the statement when it comes to the reconciliation, because that word is used in here.
Oh, yeah. I remember you also said that we had provided the auditors all the information that they requested. That is true, that what happened was we had outstanding liabilities. We had to determine what they were. We sent that to the auditors. That went to the auditors that performed the CAFR. The Associated Press contacted the auditors that do the audit. There's two sets of auditors. One performs the audit. They look at the books, make sure everything was paid out right and brought in correctly. And then there's what we call CAFR auditors that do the CAFR. We sent the information to the CAFR auditors. So when he said that, that was true. We sent them the information they requested. When the Associated Press contacted the auditors to perform the audit, the Associated Press also reported that true, because no, they haven't gotten the reconciliation. And until they get the reconciliation, they're not going to come in and do the audit. So even though you gave the information to the CAFR people, the reconciliation hasn't been completed, so you can't do the audit. So no, they haven't received information. So in both cases, the statements that the Associated Press did and the former auditor were correct. It's just a little confusing.
So, and I think maybe that's the problem, because in the midst on October 6th of all this going on and talking about the books not being reconciled and possibly this $2.5 million of federal money being lost, when this press release comes out, and we're not auditors in the media, and we're not auditors, most of us living in our own homes in Marion, if we read this, it sounds like everything's hunky-dory, and we go ahead.
Yes, well, there are still problems. So, I mean, and sitting here currently, I still have problems I have to take care of.
So, when this statement came out on October the 6th, was this of any... did he go over this with you? Because he hasn't been in the office due to a pretty serious case of COVID, I understand.
Mm-hmm.
Well, by the way, when did that happen, the COVID? There's been some confusion about that as well.
Boy, I'm... I think it occurred in September, if it's my belief. What happened was, and I don't have the specific date. I could give it to you if I was sitting at my desk, but he had went home sick, and then I think a couple days later he went and tested and received COVID. At that point, the city's safety director, Randy Carrier, had procedures, and I'm not sure if Randy has them or Amy or the mayor. Somebody has set up procedures, COVID procedures, at which time we tested all the employees. We found another one had COVID. and they were sent home. And so it was in September, I'm pretty sure. Yes, he had discussed parts of that with me. Well, he had discussed all of that with me, and all the statements that he said are basically true. I mean, they are true. I don't know as it gives a clear picture of the situation.
Another confusing event happened that week, the week that October the 6th fell in. I believe October the 6th was a Wednesday, Tuesday or Wednesday. Later that week, we learn that the auditor has accused a city councilman, Josh Daniels, head of the finance committee, of stealing his mail. Not only accused him of this, but has called the police department and asked them to do an investigation into that, which they did, which the result was that there was no mail to steal, that this was an email, is my understanding when I read the report. Were you aware that Josh Daniels had this bill and that there was no physical mail to be stolen?
I was aware of a lot of the events that occurred. What had happened was we had been notified that we had missed a payment. Now, the Ohio Public Works Commission, which is called OPWC, in the state of Ohio, gives out no-interest loans, which the city has a few of them. And then they're due every January and every July. And what they do is they send a postcard to you and say, hey, it's due. And I can't remember the sequence of events, but the postcard came to our office and thought it was taken care of. It was not. It was a mistake by our office. We didn't pay it. So what had happened was the engineer's office went to make a payment to a contractor. And with the Ohio Public Works Commission, you're given a contract, and they'll pay so much, and you pay so much, like a 60-40. And so they sent in for their 40% of pay, and the Ohio Public Works came back and said, we're not going to pay it because you owe us money. Which then Ohio Public Works sent us an email and said that you haven't paid this, as at which time we did pay it. And that letter, which was the invoice that he had, was printed off of a public website. There was discussions about the letter, but I mean, it was accessible by anyone. You could go on right now and figure out, you know, if a city in southern Ohio hasn't paid their bill, you could go down to the outstanding invoices and print it off.
Well, I guess that leads us to the question of, why would he think that his mail was stolen? Did he call the office and ask if Josh had been in there? Was he aware that anybody could go on the internet and look these things up?
I'm not sure what he was aware of. Josh did come into the office and ask me after the fact. He showed me a copy of it on his phone. The thing about the mail is, even if it was mailed, like, I mean, if a letter comes in to Martin Watts, acting auditor, it doesn't necessarily mean that is to me. It's city mail. I mean, you know, right now, you know, there are some things that still come to Bob Kramer.
Right.
And there are still letters that come to Kelly Carr, which are opened on a regular basis because it's auditor mail. You know, yes, they were former auditors, but it's not. And here again, I'm not an attorney, but I don't believe that there's any special privilege just because you're elected office or an acting office holder that mail is specifically sent to you. I believe that it's more of city mail and can be opened by anyone that is concerned about it. I don't know why the situation turned into what it was.
Was there discussion at that time? Did he come into the office at that time, Robert Landon I'm speaking of?
There was discussions through text. There was not a discussion face-to-face.
Did somebody try to explain to him, to your knowledge in those texts, that this is city mail, people can get this off a website, this is not mail fraud?
I believe that it was explained to him that it could have came any number of places. It wasn't explained to him that it came from a public website, at least not by me or the other people that were in the discussion. It was explained that this letter could have gone to any number of people. Like when I was at county or, you know, at the city, you know, you have a financial director. For an OPWC grant, you have a financial, you have a project manager, and then you have a chief executive officer. So in the city, the chief executive officer would be the mayor. So any correspondence could go to him. The project manager is Jim Bischoff, you know, so all that mail could go to him. And then the financial officer. So it was explained that this mail could go to anyone, even though it has different labels on it.
When that was explained to him, what was his response?
I don't believe he gave me a direct response.
And I appreciate the clarification on that. Getting past that, just a few short days after that, he resigned. Were you given any notice this was coming? How did you become aware of this?
On October 14th, he was in the office, and I believe that he is still suffering from the effects of COVID. He is tired and short of breath, and it has really taken a toll on him physically, in my opinion. And so he was making an attempt to come back and have his presence known. He had been there the last couple of days, and then he had left. And on October 14th, he'd called me down because he didn't feel like he could make the walk upstairs. And he gave me a copy of the, or he showed me a copy of his resignation. And I do believe that my comment was, I just asked him if he was, you know, tired of all that was going on. He said yes. And here again, my interpretation of the conversation was he asked at that time if I would be willing to stay on until a successor was appointed. And I had told him that I wasn't sure what was going to happen. I was going to talk to my wife. Unfortunately, she's a big part of the decision making
right,
in my
right.
life. As of the 14th, and by the time that I saw the letter, I believe that it had been released to the mayor, to the chairman of the Republican Party, to the Board of Elections, and to the press.
So at that point, and we had the letter here, the mayor calls you.
Yes.
At some point that day, the 14th, I believe, later on that afternoon, and he says, I'm accepting this. I've consulted the law director here in Marion. This is a resignation effective now, and will you be the interim auditor? Is that pretty well what happened?
Well, that is how it rolled out. It wasn't quite that easy. The original letter of resignation put a stipulation in that said that he would stay on until his successor was determined, which then made it very ambiguous as to was it a resignation or was it not a resignation. The problem with that statement is under the Ohio Revised Code, which here again I'm not an attorney, but you know, my experience in the Republican Party is, under the law, you have 5 days. You have to wait 5 days after there's a vacancy, and no longer than 45 days to make your appointment, which means you cannot decide anything until the office is vacant. So if he were to wait until his successor was named, it could never happen, because the party has to wait a minimum 5 days after he leaves office under Ohio Revised Code. And so there was, before that occurred, there was, you know, a lot of discussion on legal ramifications and that, but your version sounds a lot easier. there was a lot of confusion and turmoil, but it was determined, I believe, legally by Mark Russell, the law director, and he had consulted other people too, that you cannot put a stipulation on a resignation. You can put a date on it. You could say my resignation is effective tomorrow, next week, but you can't put a stipulation on it, especially one that could not occur.
The original resignation letter, and it's my understanding there have been three now, once it gets past the resignation of my family and COVID are the reason I'm leaving this office, there's some interesting things in this, it's just the last two paragraphs. It says, I can only hope that council and the mayor will spend more time on serving the people and less time playing their games. I will leave to our community the task of determining if this level of vile and repulsive politics is to be the new norm for how we conduct public meetings. Did you ever see games being played by council or Marion or vile, repulsive politics?
Here again, that's an opinion.
Right.
And that's his opinion. I mean, politics occurs. It's a political office. You know, I know people a lot of times go and say, you know, I ran for office, but I don't like politics. Well, you are a politician, and there are politics to everything. I don't believe that what occurred, I think part of what he's talking about, I think council had serious concerns, and the ones that voiced them the loudest were of the opposite party, so that could be said that that was political, although I believe that they were mostly concerned about their constituents in that. And here again, I don't know their intentions. I know that sometimes discussions got heated, and they got heated towards me too, but I don't think that they were ever personal. They, you know, I mean, a lot of times they asked me hard questions, but I don't think it was that they were attacking me. I think they were concerned with the situation. So the former auditor and I have always had a difference of opinion about what's, you know, what's an attack and what's a concern, what's a political question, and you know, what is, you know, a question just to finding facts. So I would guess that that is his belief, and I'm not disputing it. I just don't necessarily agree with it.
The next day, and I believe even in yesterday's Marion Star, it was still being referred to as, I don't have the exact word in front of me, but we're not sure that this happened, but we think it happened. Allegedly may have been the word, that the 15th, last week, or sometime since the resignation, that he tried to fire you. Is that correct?
Yes, it is.
What happened there? How did that transpire?
Well, what happened was, we had gone, and I say we, it was a concern of the city, and there were different people in there. Of course, the mayor has made it known that he was in there, and he did make the appointment, but there were other people in there that were related to the situation. And it was determined that the resignation was effective the 14th. Since he didn't put a date on it, then I understand by law that it goes by the date of the letter. So they assumed that he was was a former auditor. So he had resigned. Now, it fell upon me to do the common procedure, which we also did in January of 2020, was if a person leaves office, there are certain steps you have to take procedurally to protect the city finances. One of them is, you cut off their access to City Hall, you cut off their access to the computer system, and in a case of the auditor's office, you cut off their access to the funds. The same events occurred in January of 2020. We did that to Kelly Carr. She was no longer the auditor, so her access and everything were cut off. That occurred on Thursday. The former auditor, Robert Landon, believed that it was an attack on him, because he, at that time, didn't believe he was resigned. He believed that he was going to wait until, someone was appointed, which could never happen. And so I believe that he thought that it was a personal attack by me to shut him out. And so, yes, he did fire me.
But because he was no longer the auditor, that didn't take effect.
That's true.
A question here is, as you stated, you're a Republican. You're currently the interim auditor. The Republican Party will choose a new auditor at some point. Would you like to be the auditor?
Yes, I wouldn't mind. I don't know if that'll occur or not.
Would you think there's any reason at this point why it would not occur? Does any of this, the way this situation boiled down, do you think it might hurt your chances in the party?
Absolutely.
Yeah. And in your opinion, you were just doing what the procedure had to be.
Yes, in my opinion.
We also learned in the third resignation letter that Robert Landon finally went on to say that his resignation was effective immediately. And the reason is because he'd received a threatening voicemail, I believe it was, that people were going to picket his house. Do you know anything about that?
Other than what I read in the resignation letter, I think that the chief of police did send a person over there to look into the matter. So I do believe that the police are up to par on that, and that there is adequate protection, that nothing would occur to him or his family.
Martin, just a couple summing up questions here in this, because I think they need to be asked. You're in this profession, and as we've said, we are not. Most of us, 99% of us in Marion and listening right now, are not. When Robert Landon was in these meetings, and you had said you're not with the state, and you're not sure, or Mr. Hinkle, that he understood what was going on, and all of the disarray that you said pretty much was from day one in that office, do you believe Robert Landon was a competent auditor, coming from an auditor?
Well, I think that there's, in my opinion, there's two questions within there. I don't believe that he's an auditor. As far as if, he was set with the task of doing the job of an auditor, and I don't mean city auditor, but I mean an actual auditor. I do believe that he meets the qualifications for city auditor. I don't necessarily know that a person, I wouldn't want to give the opinion that a person that without accounting, full accounting experience, cannot be successful at this. I mean, if you look at Joan Kasotis, she came from a teacher, and then she went to the treasurer, and then she is a successful auditor. I think a lot of it is because of her her personality and her managerial skills, and the fact that she has a good eye on people and knows people and can hire and did keep competent people in there. She didn't go in and wipe the office out and, you know, and then expect positive results after that occurred. So I wouldn't want to make anybody feel that if they're sitting back there and they're saying, well, I don't have an accounting background, I know how to do books and I do my own checkbook. I don't think that they're necessarily not qualified to be an auditor, and I don't think Robert Landon was not qualified to be an auditor. I think that these tasks can be accomplished, and I think that that's why the state of Ohio says that anybody that is of voting age and lives within the district can run for city auditor. And I think that you don't have to look any farther than our Marion County auditor, that you can be a success.
I guess let me ask this then. In his tenure, which now has ended, Robert Landon, was he up to the task of doing all those things that you had said that Joan Kasotis has done very well, managing people, getting things done without a background in this field?
Well, what I would say would be just my opinion. I think that if you look at the situation, I think that answers the question.
And finally,
I think that's a good way to get out of that.
Well, no, I mean it's a complicated question. I understand these are complicated questions. In the end, what brought this about? Because it is unprecedented to have an auditor resign. The mayor said that when he called in last week. This is not a typical thing. That being said, what was the main problem in that office? What caused bills not to be paid? What caused the mispayment to the state? What caused the books not to be reconciled? What caused all of this, which eventually led to the end of his term early?
Well, here again, I would fall back on what has made Joanne successful, and that is getting the proper people in the proper position to do the task, and then making sure that you stick on them and getting that task done. I think that has led to the downfall, and I also think that there was a bit of, and I don't know if it's wasn't unjustified, but you know, he started off and he got hit with a campaign violation, and I think that he believed from the get-go that he was under attack, and that he was on the defense constantly, and that, you know, I think this kind of builds, you know.
In our last minute here, this is an interesting point. There were, right from the beginning, those campaign violations, even before he took office, which he was cleared of
yes.
at that time. But we learned through the investigation into Josh Daniels stealing the mail that there had also been another police report filed during his term about him thinking that somebody had taken information off of his computers unknowingly, and the police found that not to be true. The language that is used in these press releases, would you call him a paranoid person?
Well, that would be an opinion. I would call him he's a gung-ho, go-get-em fighter. And I think that, you know, with that attitude, which not necessarily a bad attitude, but I think with that and, you know, from the start, I think he felt that he was under the gun, and then it just promoted to thinking that, you know, whatever else happened had to be them, you know, I guess it would be the Democrats were trying to take him out. I don't necessarily believe that was the case, but I think that it all led up to that.
In the final analysis with 30 seconds, in a percentage, and this is an opinion question, how much of where the city is now that you're dealing with, these problems, go back to him, in your opinion?
Well, I'd have to say 100%, and that's not based, and that's based on my opinion, but also if you look, the 2019 audit came back, I mean, we got an award for it, and that would have been Kelly Carr's last year in office. There was an award for performance. You know, it wasn't performed by our office. We just provided the information. So, I mean, if you go from, you know, getting an award to these kind of problems, you'd have to say that 100% of the problems are caused by our office.
And we just have 10 seconds here. What kind of, if you had to use one word to describe him, because we just have not had a lot of access to him, what kind of man is he? Aside from the job, what kind of guy is he?
Oh, he's friendly, happy-go-lucky. I mean, he's a fighter, though, too. So, I mean, on a personal level, he's a great guy, you know?
It's an interesting story. And, Martin, you really have filled in a lot of holes here that we really needed to know as citizens of Marion. I can't thank you enough for coming in. And I hope you will come in the future and give us updates on where we are in this process.
Okay, not a problem. Thank you for inviting me.
Thank you for coming. Interim Auditor here in Marion, Martin Watts. Back in just a couple minutes.
He was taken to Firelands Regional Medical Center Hospital, where he was treated and released. Whether or not alcohol drug impairment was related to the crash is still